Good morning, everybody. I want to welcome everyone to the Fred Report conference call for July 1st, 2010. Obviously, some eventful market events here, so we'll get right into what we feel is going on here. And I guess the first thing I'm going to do is a very quick review of how we got to where we were or where we are right now. Back in April, the market gave an indication that we were going to have a low in early May and then a summer rally, followed by the worst correction of the bull market from the 2009 lows to date. And we realized after the mini crash in mid-May that there was a change and that correction had in fact started. And the reason we gave for that at the time was our monthly indicators had to come down and correct. And we were looking for a June-July time frame for that correction to be corrected. That was a little bit confirmed after the down move on May 20th, because that down move indicated a divergence bottom, which is a higher low in momentum and a lower low in price. That was very high probability. And then after June 8th, we got another signal saying that we would have a better buy signal later in the summer, likely at the end of June or possibly at the end of July. And the reason I go into this is that as of this point in time, pretty much all of these characteristics have been satisfied. And so what we've been doing over the past week is adding very slowly some stocks, including a nice speculative one, with the idea being that somewhere in here we're going to actually find and make that low, and ideally we will close somewhere in this area, not too much lower than this. I'm actually looking for 10.5 on the SPX, so we're in that area as a closing price on Friday to get the weekly indicators down. We do have the monthly indicators coming down. People can look and verify that. I think the monthly Fred's Price Oscillator is low enough. We did get the McClellan Oscillator daily. That was one of the things that was not in place for this, down to the minus 150 area yesterday. So basically, unless the market falls apart completely in here, and we're not expecting that, we are in position now, finally, to start a meaningful rally, which is sort of, given the news and stuff that we're seeing, probably somewhat sacrilegious, okay? But we're going to go with that, and so basically, you know, again, we've added some stocks to our list. We think that that's probably early, as we've mentioned each time we've added them, and by the way, we'd like to point out that almost everybody following one of our lists will do better than our list because of some of the constraints and such that we have going on it. Basically, we're actually positive in here, although thinking a couple more days of choppiness and decline could occur. So what I'm telling people is, you know, on down days, very slowly put some money in. Ideally will be, you know, about 20%, 30% of the money that we have removed from the market in April, May, back in here by Friday, and then we see what happens, because we think a rally should start next week if this is going to work. Let's talk a little bit about the bond market, because we have had some questions on the TLT and the LQD. I guess the first thing is we've been looking for the possibility of the TLT challenging the 103 area and then moving back below 100. And if that happens, and that's what we expect, this whole move on the TLT could turn into a false breakout. And if that's the case, we'll finally see some down move in these rates. Like we've mentioned on calls and in the letters, there are so many people short these T-bonds. They've just got to have more pain, and it looks like we're getting that pain here. Let's say we're wrong about that, and let's say these bonds continue to go up. If that's the case, we still like the LQD better. It has also broken out of the top end of its range, which is around 107.50, and it should slingshot up and follow the Treasury bonds if the T-bonds keep going here. So we'll have to see what happens with these bonds. Right now, we think that idea is that these bonds are having a false breakout and will turn around and go down, but we'll have to see. In any event, in either case, we still prefer the LQD. Looking at the high-grade yields, by the way, the HYG, when we see the S&P turn around, we feel these high-grade bonds are a prospect for, you know, a proxy, if you will, for risk, and we're going to look to buy the HYG for a trade, likely we would hope from 82 to, say, 90, which would be a decent little trade on that. We mentioned in our last set of letters that gold was starting to look a little bit weak. There have been some bad days in gold. I don't think gold is a long-term sale here. I think gold is way up longer term, but we actually may see some pullback if things stabilize in here. Gold has been trading opposite the commodities. Oil, on the other hand, you know, had a little bit of a rally. It's still trying to hold the 33, 34 area on the USO. Back above 35 again, and we would really like that. The other thing that's just interesting here to me, remember that this whole crisis, if you will, was sparked by the euro, and the euro is actually poised to break out of a head and shoulders bottom here, much above 124 on the FXE, would target 126, and that would start a breakout on the euro that could trade as high as 128 to 130. And that actually looks like it's going right along on course here. And the stock market, of course, obviously right now is not noticing that. One thing in favor of the euro, there's a trick that does work, and I would point it out to people. I didn't want to put this in print because it doesn't always work. But one way to sometimes get the direction of the euro is to take a look at the Swiss franc, which is FXF, Fred Xylophone Fred. And that has already broken out of its head and shoulders and has had a really stentorian move to the upside. So I think, frankly, that the euro can follow that. The Japanese yen also looks good as well, but that's not a proxy for the euro. That accumulation model on the yen is still one of the very best, though, that we have. With that, we'll go into some of the individual stocks that we've been looking at on our trading list. The first one, AUY, still trading in the trading range. The bottom of the range is around 975. The top end of the range is around 1120 or so. We've been looking for 1140 or so to emerge from that trade, and we're still looking for that. We have risk management parameters posted, and obviously we will follow those. We re-added BB&T Banks back to our trading list. It has come down. Banks are not one of my favorite sectors, but people want a financial, and this is a decent-looking one with a very nice yield on it. So we still are more interested in this than some of the other banks. Banks are likely underperformers for a while. We added United Technologies to our list yesterday. The stock is down a little bit, but you'll notice, even as an S&P proxy, it has not yet made new lows. It's definitely outperforming the markets, and if the market does turn up next week as we are expecting, this stock should actually do pretty well. We did want to have an oil stock on the list. Chevron came down to the 70 area, which is where we should have bought it the last time. We did not. We like the looks of this, and obviously that's, again, predicated on the market turning up, which we think is going to happen, and use risk management, obviously, on all of these in case they do not work. We took a little bit of risk here. We mentioned in the weekly letter we were going to take a little bit more risk. Very interesting stock is PANL. It's a really nice chart. The company's got interesting technology, which frankly shouldn't mean much to us as technicians. The point is it has been an interesting stock. It's building a sort of high-tight flag or coil formation. We feel if this market turns up, this stock will be a leader. Frankly, if the market doesn't turn up, this is probably a $12 name. So, again, above-average risk in this one. Be careful, but we think it's a good gamble here. Ford, we've had some questions on. The stock is basically holding the $10 area. Anything back above 10.50 targets 11.50 to 12. We actually think this name is looking a little bit better again, and so we can feel fairly comfortable with this one. We probably wouldn't buy it ourselves until it moves above 11, but if you're in it, I would certainly consider holding it unless the market weakens a bit more. Amazon has been a question for us because of a couple of people that have been short the stock. As long as the stock stays below 116, my belief is the stock can test the 108 area, and you know, should that occur, I would probably cover my short positions in that stock. Amazon is not a favorite here, even though it's in the technology sector. For some reason, I don't know what it is, but this means you usually learn it at the end. Amazon and Google, those stocks are terrible charts. Google looks terrible to me as well. If we do get a rally in the market and Google can get back anywhere near 500, it's probably a fabulous short with an objective in the 360 to 400 area. I'd short it here, except frankly the risk parameters are out of the range for me. I mean, I guess you could short it with a stop at 470. But the fact is this stock looks like it can rally to 500 if the market turns around, which we are expecting. We have had some questions on CYB. That is the ETF for the Chinese yuan or yuan. I actually never knew how to pronounce that. Someone can tell me how to do that in the question and answer period. It did pop up on the open. Now it's pretty stable. It looks like it could rally a little bit, but I think it's basically not going to do much, although it is positive. We've had some questions on Japan in light of recent news. The JOF continues to trade comfortably above the June lows, which the S&P is through, and hold the $8 area. We continue to like this market and would be putting a little bit of money in there as things turn around. We note that the EWJ blue chips in Japan are trading worse than the small caps in Japan, but they still haven't really gone through those June lows. One of our favorite speculations in that whole Asian area is Malaysia. The EWM, that looks still very positive, comfortably above the June lows, and if the market turns around, that is going to be an excellent speculation. If the market doesn't turn around, the tendency would be for that to weaken. So, again, a little bit of caution there. When I look at the emerging markets, for example, the EEM, that also is trading comfortably above these June lows. And so for my money, those areas are looking interesting, and the market looks positive. And by the way, if you look at the FXI, China is also trading very comfortably above the May-June lows in spite of the very bad news on the, on the Chinese economy that we're seeing. And the HAO, which is our small caps in China, is now trading in line with the FXI, at least on this correction, but still is a better chart overall. So I guess to sum up a little bit, we're looking for a little bit more weakness here in the S&P, largely I think because there's just not a lot of people around. People are pretty much taking some time off here, and I think people are concerned about some of the economic numbers that are coming out tomorrow. So we could be just sort of choppy and down into tomorrow, but if this market, we're expecting a rally to start as early as next week, and if it doesn't start by next week, we'll start to reevaluate our positive view here. But I'll tell you guys, I mean, 960 was a target back in April. It's only about 8% away from the close yesterday. Guys, I know it's risky, and I know it's scary. It's scary to me, too. But if you're going to try to buy a low, golly, this is one you got to try to buy. So that's, why I guess, why I'm doing it. And, it still looks like we're on schedule. With that, we'll get into some of the questions from Jeff and them.
Hey, Fred, how are you?
Fine, Jeff. How you doing?
Doing pretty good. Hey, first question for you is, obviously, the dollar is getting kind of eradicated today.
Yes.
And obviously the euro has been eradicated for a while as well. When the euro was weak, the European equity markets kind of got hit as well. What's to prevent the U.S. equity markets remaining weak if the dollar goes into a weak period?
The short answer is there's nothing to prevent that I can see. It's possible that will occur. But, Jeff, what I've been looking at and trading off of or guessing on is basically, even though it looks to me like the euro can rally and the dollar is going to come down, there's an awful lot of concern about the euro in terms of it being a weak currency. And I think a lot of that money that would be speculating in Europe, looking at European stocks and European smaller cap stocks, is going to come over to America. We all know the dollar has problems, but there's not a fear that the dollar is going to go away, whereas there are fears that the euro is going to go away. So we feel that money is actually going to come into the United States, possibly into Asia, and that should support the markets. The weak dollar has never really been correlated with stock prices, so we hope it's not going to be correlated this time either.
Yeah. And that's the point that I wanted to make, because obviously The U.S. stock market has done extremely well when the dollar has been weak, because obviously U.S. companies benefit from the weak dollar with their exports.
And let's take a quick look at history, by the way, because this is really fun. If you go and look at the dollar from 1985 to 1987, the dollar went straight down, the dollar went straight up, and everyone was excited about stock prices, and we had a big bull market in stocks. Then in 1987, the dollar started going down. We had the crash of 87 because the Secretary of the Treasury at the time made some crack about how we weren't going to support the dollar. But after that, the dollar turned around and went right back up, and so did the market. There really is, if you look at the dollar and the stock market in terms of correlation, absolutely no correlation at all, as funny as that sounds. What happens with the dollar is that you get events that cause fear regarding the dollar, but they're usually things that cause one event sort of markets and not real, there's no real correlation.
That's great. Hey, so quick question this morning. You made a really good call on gold, saying that gold kind of looked toppy in here and it really didn't have a lot more upside. Are you surprised today that the dollar is so weak and that gold is struggling?
No, I'm not. And the reason I say that is gold has gone up on sort of a solitary walk versus the other commodities like oil, like the DVC. In other words, if you look at the DVC and gold, there's usually a lot more correlation between broad-based commodities and gold than there is right now. And sometimes that does occur, and the reason, because gold is going up on fear rather than on fundamentals. And if that's the case here, and we think some of this fear is going to start to abate in July, August, gold's going to come down to reflect that lack of fear and not reflect the fundamentals. We still do like gold longer term. We are not saying get rid of all your gold positions and gold stocks. What we are saying is that if gold starts to weaken a little bit, in other words, we would get rid of our overweight in gold, and we would look to add the GLD back in the 112 to 115 area if we can. We've been looking, and by the way, let's just circle back. With all this hoorah and flying around on the dollar and on gold, basically we were looking for the dollar to have a move from 82 to 86, and we got a little bit above that, but not much, and now we're sitting right at 86, and the dollar's weak today. Or in gold to rally into July, and it's now July. So there's really, if you strip away all the emotion, which I, of course, feel also, there's really nothing too wacko going on here.
Great. Hey, so on gold, it really hasn't come off that much from its highs. If it were able to go back above its prior highs, which is roughly call it 123.5, which is kind of done two times in June, would you be a buyer if we break out to a new high from there?
Absolutely, yes. The reason for the negativity that I had in gold was that we did get up to that 123.50 area, but we got up there both times on very small trading range days and gaps, and that's often the sign of a short-term peak. And each time we have come down with a fairly wide range bar that's opened high and closed low. And so that sort of trading pattern was really why I got nervous on gold. And that plus my accumulation model suggested that gold was getting tired. But I think gold is going ultimately much higher than this. And if it starts to do that, in other words, if the trading pattern improves, I think you have to go with it right away.
Great. Kind of another kind of question kind of related to gold is looking at the OIH. It seems pretty interesting. The last 2 days, the OIH has been up. It's even up today when the market's down. What is your take on that?
I think that the oil stocks and some of the oil service stocks are starting to finally reflect that there's going to be more oil exploration and drilling, this whole horrible, ghastly BP thing notwithstanding. We've got to have exploration for oil, and some of these stocks have come down alarmingly. you know, quite a huge amount and still look, you know, and so I think there's some value here, and that's what's going on. And oil does rally in the summer generally, and I think that we could see June, July, August up in oil. We notice that BP is trying to rally here, and it's even up on a down day in stocks. Guys, we still, one of our first questions after the disaster was, golly, can we buy BP now? And I still don't see any reason to do that. I am going to miss the bottom on BP. I can grant you that. But I'm, you know, the bottom's already lower than I thought it was going to be. But stocks like Chevron, stocks like Devon, stocks like Halliburton, you know, stocks like Schlumberger, these are starting to act and look pretty good. If you'll look at Halliburton and Schlumberger, for example, they're nowhere near the lows on the S&P.
Right.
So it's a good area, I think.
So, Fred, one question that people start to get concerned about as you have a correction that kind of starts to get a little bit out of control is a crash. And what are indicators that you would pay attention to that might alert you that we might be entering into, like, a crash mode?
You know, I think the real thing here, Jeff, is if we don't, you know, if we don't stop going down next week, this market could just explode to the downside. You know, 960 on the S&P would be, you know, certainly possible. And if we go through that, there's numbers down in the high and low to mid at the 800s, very possible. But I don't see that right now. It really looks to me like some kind of a rally is going to ensue here. I just, Jeff, with the amount of people around today and the uncertainty around tomorrow's numbers, I just don't see that sort of thing. The other thing that might do a crash here, oh good, the euro through 124, which means we're starting to break out of that head and shoulders bottom. The other thing that might cause it is if the euro really goes down and takes out the lows and it looks like we're going to have huge currency unrest, that would be another thing I would look for.
Fantastic. I think you did a really good job in kind of answering those questions. At this point, I would like to open up the call to any questions. Remember, people just hit *6 if you got questions for Fred. So at this point, I'll open it up. Any questions for Fred?
Fred, what do you think about Chesapeake and PetroHawk, the natural gas?
Okay. I have been looking at Chesapeake for a while, and as soon as it comes up on my machine, you know, I think that those are good, solid nibbles in here. You want to try to buy Chesapeake between this price and, say, 19, see if it can break the June low, so I'd be sort of nibbling away at that. Natural gas continues to look attractive. What's the symbol on PetroHawk, please?
HK.
HK. That looks a little bit worse than Chesapeake, but between here and, say, 15.30 would be where you would want to get that stock, and then we're going to look at that on a rally as well.
More questions for Fred?
Hey, Fred, Teddy, can you hear me?
I sure can, Teddy. How are you doing this morning?
Let me ask you a question on the FPO. Wouldn't you wouldn't rather see it in an oversold condition than where it is now, +2.5, huh?
On the what? On which? I'm sorry, what's
your indicator? Your indicator.
My indicator, Teddy, has come down, okay? The monthly closed June at -4, and frankly, to get that down to -10, I'd have to have the S&P close at 560 at the end of July, down 50% from here. Okay. If it were
anywhere
in
the FPO on a daily basis or not.
Yeah. And but on that indicator, I would say that the daily is now nicely oversold and could be getting and frankly is in the buy zone. The only thing we don't have in the buy zone and giving a divergence buy is the weekly FPO, and that if we're down like this on Friday will happen. So everything should be set up all in a row.
Fred, Michael.
Hey, Michael.
Hey, Fred, get your crystal ball out and give us an idea how high the market could go, say SPY, and how long to get there.
You know, that's always very, very difficult. If this rally is going to work and it's going to be a bad rally, the SPY will go back to 112 and die. Okay? If we go through 112, we are going to see a move back, I think, to new highs for the year from here. Okay? How's that for a ballsy one? Pardon my French, by the way. I think, you know, if this is, in fact, the worst correction of this bull market that started in 2009, and it's a correction and not a brand-new bear market, this should do it. At the end of this correction, this should be it for about a year. Okay? So that's what we're going to have to see. And obviously, guys, in order to see that, it's not going to just have to go down. I freely acknowledge the fact that it's going to have to go up as well. Okay, so that we got to see. But I want to, in terms of the trading pattern today, I'm much more highly stimulated seeing it down early in the day and having a chance to rally later in the day than falling apart at the end of the day like we did yesterday. And what would be great, honestly, I mean, and again, guys, I mean, I know it's painful being there, and you don't feel great when this happens, but if we could have some really horrible news on unemployment or something like that tomorrow, say we get the unemployment rate up to 12% tomorrow, and the Small Business Administration says no one's going to hire anybody at all until after the election because there's no point, and the market gaps down on the open and then closes above that gap and closes flat, that would be it for me. That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah. Hey, Fred, I have three stocks, Goldman, Citi, and Verizon.
Goldman, Citi, and Verizon. Let's have a quick look at those. Goldman has not been one of my favorite brokerage stocks for a while, Julia, but it's actually holding on here reasonably well. When I look at the real long-term pattern on Goldman, you know, the real support on Goldman is probably 120 to 122, so we're fairly close to that. I would look at that stock there. I got to tell you, Julia, my favorite of the brokerage stocks remains RJF, Raymond James. That's been a great-looking stock, although it's down certainly this week. And support on Raymond James, by the way, is around 21-22. And that would be a name that I could look at. The stochastic's starting to get oversold. Verizon is another interesting one. That stock is actually holding up well, and telecom is one of my favorite defensive sectors. As long as Verizon holds 26 to 27, I'm happy with it, and the stock could rally to 30. And telecom, as I mentioned before, is one of my favorite defensive sectors. And what was your third one, Julia?
Citi,
oh, God. That stock, fair amount of support at 340 to 350. It's not particularly appealing to me even there, but it looks like it's going to hold 340, 350.
Thanks, Fred.
More questions for Fred?
Hey, Fred, it's Jeff. How about
you?
Good. How about LVS Las Vegas?
And you know, that's one of those ones that if it starts to run, I think is going back. You know, we were looking for 28 to 30, and it got to 27.90. If that stock can hold 19, I'm going to buy the stock, okay, on this correction. This is one that looks like it's going to be a range between, say, 19 and 27, maybe 19.50 and 27. It's been a high flyer, Jeff, and it's going to probably come down more, which it seems to be doing from the highs.
Yeah, where were you said support's at 19?
Yeah, support is 19 to 1950. There's layers of support in there.
Okay, how about MDAF?
Mike Delta. MDAF.
Michael Delta Midas. Alpha Sierra.
Midas, Sierra, yeah. Okay, Midas, yeah. That's got support in the 2150 to 22 area, so it's pretty close to support, and the daily stochastic is coming down as well. So
and then did you comment? Did you comment on Bank America?
I did not, but I certainly can and I will. Before I do that, though, guys, keep your eyes on EW, Edwards Life Sciences. That stock broke out to new highs yesterday. It's down today, but that's another one of those that if this market turns around and starts to go up, could start to be good. And Bank of America, holy mackerel, it's really broken down through the support area. And what that would suggest to me is, actually very short term, it looks like it's trying to bottom. If this stock gets back above 1450, it's probably a buy. Otherwise, it's an avoid, and your target on it's probably 11.
Thanks, Fred.
Certainly.
Any more questions for Fred?
Hey, Fred, what did you say, EWS?
EWS is in Sam.
Do you still like the EWM, which you mentioned last week?
Yes, I do. It's trading along pretty well. I mean, it's Teddy, the only thing on that is, you know, it's kind of thin. If the markets really start to do badly here after this week, be careful on that EWM. It could get mushed. But
yeah,
otherwise, it looks interesting. And so does the EWS between here and 11. There's a fair amount of support. And I note that these Asian markets are really outperforming the U.S. market at this time. I'm not sure why that is, but it looks like that's what's happening.
Thank you, Fred.
Fred.
Yes, sir.
Fred, Dollar Tree, DLTR, and CREE.
Dollar Tree is still very nicely up, Butch. You've been playing that stock like a guitar. You've done really well with that. 39.60 is support below 39.60, Butch. I start to get nervous and look for 37, but this stock looks like if the market turns up, it's going to go and make new highs. And what's your other one, Butchie?
CREE, C-R-E-E.
C-R-E-E. Butch, it's outperforming the markets by a little bit, but it is at new lows. Let me look at the weekly chart for a minute. Butch, you've got a fair bit of support on this. If it doesn't get it back above 59, it looks like support's in the 54.5 area.
Okay, thank you.
More questions for Fred? Hey, Fred, I'm gonna wrap it up then with two last questions for you. Retail stocks have been hit pretty hard. A good kind of composite to look at is the RTH. Can you take a look at that and kind of give us your thoughts here on that?
Yes, it's come down into support. One of the things I would look at on this RTH is, I'm looking at the weekly chart, there's weekly support. Let me get to the daily chart. It has really violated the January-February lows, it looks like. I'm trying to get, yeah, it has. So unless this thing moves back above 90 or so, my guess is that that is probably going to be dead money for a while, and I would not buy it. One thing I don't know, Jeff, and maybe Phil knows, and I'd be very interested in the answer to this, is there seasonal weakness in this thing in the summer before the fall school buying season?
Well, I can answer that question for you really quickly because I can just pull up the seasonality chart and kind of tell you what it looks like. Here,
good.
Hang on, let me just take a quick.
And while you're doing that, by the way, with all of this, the consumer discretionary ETF is still actually above the January-February lows. I think the real big trap here that we have to watch out for is healthcare still looks terrible. The XLV still looks really, really awful relative to some of the other ETFs, yet that everyone is talking about how healthcare is a defensive sector and how it's acting better and blah, blah, blah. And I'm afraid that if we end up needing to be defensive and we go into healthcare, that we're going to have problems. I think if we're going to try to be defensive, it's probably going to be staples, telecom, and possibly utilities, not healthcare. That's where, I mean, there's always a hook or a trap somewhere in the market, and my concern is that if I'm wrong on a rally and this market just goes down, and obviously that's certainly possible, that if we try to hide in healthcare, it's going to get down more than the market.
Okay, great. To answer you on the seasonality, basically, the RTH doesn't have a huge amount of history. It does kind of do a nice bottom August 6th, although there's not like a huge correlation on it, and it does get a good run into September. What I did, though, is I went and looked at just the bigger sector where he's got a composite of that, and it really doesn't hit a nice bottom until October, which is where all stocks do, you know?
Right.
And then it just runs, you know, basically until the following June. So that's when retail really gets its best move from that standpoint.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, guys, I've been of the opinion that we're not going to have a double dip recession and that this is just a pullback in somewhat of a slow economic uptrend. Obviously, we could be wrong on that, but I would point out that every type of move economically, you always have reactions against a major trend. And that person that was trying to call in is actually my favorite economist, the guy that was calling my other phones. So I'll probably mention some stuff on that in next week's weekly report. I'll also mention this month's monthly report I'm going to do this weekend, and I'm going to do a big thing on the monthly Fred's Price Oscillator. That's been giving off some very bullish signals. Just in closing, Jeff, I would mention, you know, it is very, very rare for the advanced decline line and the transports to top on the exact day the bull market ends. Normally, those things start to top at least a year in advance of where the bull market ends, and you see the Dow and some of the other bluer chip stuff do better. And that's another thing that makes me think this is not a truly significant, you know, bear market starting here.
Okay, so
we'll just have to see how that goes.
That was actually one of my last. That was a follow-up question to what you were just saying, which is, you know, what leads you to believe that it isn't a double dip? Is it exactly what you just said?
Yeah, Jeff. If you go back and look at 1998 to 2000 on the S&P and the transports, what you see is the transports in the advanced decline line peaked in 1998, and then the Dow and everything else peaked in 2000, and that was a pretty dramatic example of this. But that's what normally happens. The advanced decline line starts to peak. What's been especially interesting on this decline, Jeff, and it's probably not going to be true this week, but I'm dying to see the numbers, is we've had positive new highs, new lows, the last 3 weeks as this market has come down, okay? That is really, you know, the question I have more about that is the data wrong? I mean, you just don't normally see that, but you have to go with it and say that that's actually extremely positive.
Yep.
And very rare. I mean, and certainly not bear market action.
Well, on your point, I heard something which was kind of interesting on, you know, the whole transports. A, the airlines are almost at all capacity, and obviously there's a reason for that because they've reduced their number of flights, their load factor is high.
Right.
But the other thing that was interesting is I heard last night that holiday travel this weekend is supposed to be up 24% on a year-over-year basis.
Right, okay.
So that kind of fits into the stuff that you're saying as well.
Yeah, I can tell you it's not easy to get a cheap hotel room.
So the very, very last question, then we'll end this call, is do you like to look at candlestick charts at all within how you do things?
I do like to look at candlestick charts because I do think that you can see examples of excess sentiment and stuff. You know, it, like we had at the peak a week ago with the big up open and the down close. But the problem with candle charts to me is that people love to look at the fancy Japanese names for them and tend to obscure what the charts are actually saying. I don't get a lot of those formations, but I will look at candlestick charts, but I'm afraid I'm basically a bar chart kind of guy.
Okay. Kind of within that, you can use the bar chart to do the same thing. It seems like at bottoms, what ends up happening is on the lowest day, you can end up getting a really wide range, but then
yeah,
you end up closing like with basically no change at all. Do you want to see something like that occur for like the potential bottom that you're talking about?
It would be nice if we did that. If this market were to fight its way back to unchanged today, that would be something I would like to see. But, you know, given, Jeff, this is the sort of a different kind of bottom. Don't forget that seasonally speaking, you are generally up into a holiday weekend, and one of the reasons for that is it's light volume because there's not a lot of people around, and so there's no sellers to come in. The buyers just push it up. The same thing happens, though, in a downtrend or if you've got an emotional weekend coming up. There's really not a lot of buyers running around, and this is sort of the last bit of selling, hopefully, coming in for this. So my guess is if we're going to see something like that, it's going to be tomorrow and not today.
Fantastic. Well, I think you did a really good job kind of giving everyone your updated thoughts in what's a pretty tough market here. So thanks for your time, and with that, I'll turn it back to you to finish up.
Okay. Guys, I want to thank everyone, particularly any new subscribers that have been on the call, for participating. And with that, I will conclude the Fred Report weekly conference call for July 1st, 2010.
I'll be available, sir.